It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Now, here we are, Peter's Dose. All right, so the 500th episode of the Magical Talking Hat podcast will be recorded on Saturday, October 10th at 3 p.m. Central Time, which is also Chicago time. I don't know a good, I was like, it's six now, but that's not helpful to people because we're not live. So but it's probably just an issue for Craig. The rest of y'all are, I think, in the U.S. and you understand. But people that I know want to attend and that I have emails for, so I will be sending you, because it'll be on Zoom. Everybody has to have video and audio. And the people that I will be sending the invite to, because I have your email and know you want to participate so far, are David, Beth, Jazz, Blood Sparrow, Azure Talon, Craig. I mean, William and Trish, because they have to. Can you think of anybody I'm missing?
I mean, I don't know if Stu... Oh, wait. Did you say Stu already?
I didn't say Stu. I'm going to have to check with Stu. I don't remember whether or not he wanted to, and I don't know, because he's a family guy. Not like the show. He has children, I mean. So I don't know if a Saturday afternoon works for him, but I'm going to check with him, and then we also need to check with Mark in some fashion.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody else. Yeah, I can't think of anybody.
All right, so that's eight people.
I'll probably feel bad later.
Eight people counting you and Trish, because I haven't written this down anywhere, so I better remember. But Saturday, October 10th, 3 p.m. Central Time. And I will send you people a Zoom invite, and then whoever the hell shows up, shows up. You don't need to RSVP or whatever. It'll just be, I will mock you if you say you were going to and you didn't. But I will also mock you when you're there if you do show up. So, careful. Anyway, it's going to happen. Very exciting. For those of you just listening to the audio, and I recently found out someone has only been listening to the audio recently because it's just more conducive to their lifestyle, essentially. I have left the kitchen light on in the hopes that it lights me better in this room. So when you are picturing me in your head while you're listening, picture me better lit than you have been picturing me. William is always well lit, if blandly lit. Just yep. Straight up the matte finish of lighting. I'm sure there's a term for it, but it's just light.
Yep.
Definitely very, not natural light.
Very
definitely
bright.
Not a spotlight. It's just light.
I mean, you can't even see it. Can you see the, yeah, you kind of, can you see the my shadow at all? Not really.
No, I can see a little bit of it right behind your neck, sort of, but not really. I can see the shadow of your bookcase and a phone.
Yeah, the angle of the camera and the angle of the light are pretty much identical. So,
hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world recording its 500th episode on Saturday, October 10th, 3 p.m. Central. Yeah, I really need to write this down. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 496.
Man, so you and I are going to record episode 499, and then 2 days later, I have to record 500.
Yeah.
You know what I'm most excited about? After 500, it'll be at least 500 more before I have to make a big deal again. I don't like this putting effort into things. It's annoying. For those of you just joining us, I should explain how the show works and how soon we'll have 500 episodes. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address. These aren't questions. I'm talking like that, but I'm not. They're statements. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. And people, not enough people, we're getting really low. But people, the good kind, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. I want to start doing that, doing things and referencing as though we had post effects that we don't have, like referencing the number down here or my Chiron or whatever. I want to do that. anyway, those people write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions. That kind of thing. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written physically on them that manifest inside the hat itself. Long-time servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show, except the parts that aren't, which is really a lot of it. Okay? Okay. All right, good show. Good night, everybody. Oh, wait. How is your week?
Did you say good show? Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever heard you say that before.
And you'll note that we didn't end the show, so it was a lie, so I figured I might as well double down.
That's how
you know we're not really done.
I mean, lately, well, what do I mean lately? I mean, it's obviously this whole year, much less the last 4 years, is just full of things happening that you are, you know, are discussion worthy, and yet a lot of times the last thing you really want to talk about. Like, it's either bad or it's challenging, if not entirely bad. So a lot of times before the show, I'm kind of curious as to what Tony thinks about this, that, or the other thing. And sometimes I go ahead and ask about it, which we always talk about. I'm usually not regretful that we talked about it, but this time it's like, I don't know if we want to talk about any of those things. And meanwhile, there are things like movies and TV shows and stuff. I'm reading Nathaniel Hawthorne again and stuff. It's like, yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about that, or I feel like it's going to be boring if I talk about that. So this week, for whatever reason, there's more things for me. There seems to be more things than usual that are like at the tip of my brain to talk about, but the gatekeeper is like, nah, don't bring that up. We don't want to talk about that, especially not on the air or whatever. I mean, a lot of controversial things, you know, in the last week or two that are just like, I can't wrap my brain, you know, around.
I thought of something today I want to ask you about, but I don't think I can do it on the podcast because I feel like it's a question of the likes of which will fill up an entire podcast, and I don't think it'll be a very interesting one. But yeah, I want to know your thoughts, so I'm going to have to save that for some time off the air.
Yeah, sometimes that too. Sometimes I'm sure that you and I will find it interesting to talk about, but we could fill up the whole thing. So, I mean, I guess I don't really have like any, you know, there's no kind of media that I really have strong feelings about. I am reading Hawthorne again. I've got this thick collection of all of his short stories that I'm reading, and then I take notes on it and stuff afterwards. And I really do enjoy his work a lot. I'm really glad that I'm reading it finally. Although I suspect that if I tried to read it in high school or even at some points in college, I'm not sure I would have appreciated it the way I really appreciate it now.
So I should wait till I'm your age.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
well, I'm gonna. So
one thing I really like about,
and I don't mean till I'm the age you are now. I mean until I match your age.
One thing I really like about
6 years after you die,
about his stuff is how he addresses, you know, human psychology and the human experience and things in a. I mean, just about everybody I read from the 19th century does that, but everyone else does it more, you know, metaphorically and things like that. And he's addressing these things a little more head on, but not in a way that sounds, what do I want to say, like instructive or preachy or anything like that. It's like it really comes up in what he's writing in a very organic way. Although Edgar Allan Poe criticized him for using allegory too much. And I think Poe also thought he sort of held the hand of the reader a little bit too much, right? Instead of just, you know, using metaphor and other things to sort of make the point, let the reader figure it out or not figure it out if the reader wasn't smart enough to do that. But I don't think he overdoes it. I think he, you know, when he kind of addresses something explicitly, he does it exactly right, in my opinion. And some of his stories really uncover things that later thinkers, like, you know, a lot of the stuff he wrote was before Freud, and yet he addresses directly the unconscious, dreams, repression. I mean, you know, all of these concepts that later on Freud and later Jung are going to talk about, and they're going to become a part of the science of psychology and the science of counseling psychology. You know, he's writing sort of explicitly about these experiences and these, you know, foibles of the human experience. And it's really interesting. Now, again, I think I can point to where Mary Shelley does that. I think I can point to where Bram Stoker does that, but not quite the way Hawthorne does it. And I just really appreciate it a lot. I mean, I think you could, I often think that if I was an instructor or a professor, like I'd plan to be, I mean, even if it was in like still in like sociology or philosophy or something, I'd still want to teach a class where this was the textbook and we could read these short stories and we could, what are the human behavioral concepts that are being addressed here, you know, in the early 19th century, you know, before the late 19th century when these things were formalized. And a lot of people like to think that, you know, Freud was like the first person to even think of this stuff or come up with this stuff, but clearly not. I mean, these were conversations that thinkers were having before that, and you can see it in the writing of Nathaniel Hawthorne pretty clearly. So to me, it's super fascinating and fun. I maybe it wouldn't interest anybody else. But here's the thing. You go into a bookstore, right, and you want to find things written by Nathaniel Hawthorne, and you can pretty much only find Scarlet Letter. You can't even find usually House of Seven Gables or anything else, and you certainly don't find a collection of his short stories. And it just blows my mind because this is really good stuff. I mean, I think you should be able to go to your local bookstore and easily find new in-print copies of this stuff. But you can pretty much only find the Scarlet Letters if that's the only thing he ever wrote.
If you'd like to learn more about Nathaniel Hawthorne, visit your local library. Except don't. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. So, you know, Google it like the rest of us would.
Anyway, see what I mean? I want to talk about these things. It's like, who cares? You don't even care.
Yeah, but there's a point you're missing here. I don't care about anything you talk about. Like, the topic does not matter. It's all like that.
Right, but When you talk about things, you could it usually be like, engages me in
where I was in a warehouse explosion and killed three people last week. And I'd be like,
okay, okay. Well, why don't you talk about your week? And maybe we can have some interesting discussion about that.
It has been a doozy of a week. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, it has. Really roller coaster for me emotionally. I think it's easiest to talk about it chronologically, in fact.
Okay.
So, on Saturdays, we play a D&D game on Zoom that my sister-in-law runs.
Mm-hmm.
But on account of varying things, mostly involving the start of the new school year and stuff, a bunch of the people involved took September off. And I was like, hey, that's four Saturdays we're not playing D&D, but that we're used to having that time. Why don't I take Trish and my sister-in-law and members of my regular gaming group and run through a game that I had purchased recently that I've been curious about? We can just run it through to sort of try it out. And they were all like, sure, let's do that. And so we're going to do that. The game is called The Veil. For those of you who know this kind of stuff, it is based off of – it is powered by the apocalypse. Which is an engine I've been wanting to play with more, and it's a cyberpunk-based game, which I've been wanting to play more of also. It is very collaborative. Like, it has a couple of tentpole premises that, like, is the reason you bought the game. But otherwise, you and the group define the entire setting and world and the rules to it and the technology and everything, and the players pick characters or playbooks, as they're called in apocalypse stuff, and what they pick intrinsically determines a lot of like what kind of things you're going to want in that setting, because these playbooks are very often around a specific concept. And so if you pick that as your character, you're saying, I want to do a lot of that. And you're encouraged to go through and be like, okay, what do you like about this character playbook? Why did you pick it? And write that down and work all this stuff out. And our first session, we did that. We were making characters. We were making setting. It was a ton of stuff, a lot of moving parts. It was very exciting. And then I need to set things off. But again, it's collaborative. I'm not supposed to do a plot per se.
Mm-hmm.
We do some settings, they play in character, and then I start making, you know, threats and the motivations of NPCs and all this kind of stuff. So I'm thinking, like, how are we going to set this up? I don't know. Oh, what about that? And all week I'm doing it. And by Saturday morning, I'm still like, I don't know what the opening scene's going to be. I need something going on there. And I think I kind of put it together, but I've been freaking out this whole time. And we get together, and people are just chatting about stuff, and I'm not too much because I'm nervous and all this, and I choked. I was like, I can't do this, guys. Sorry to waste your time. Talk to you later. I couldn't do it. I was having bordering on a real panic attack.
Really?
Yeah, it was just too much. It felt like too much to do, and it was too – I think this is a really cool game, but I was like, you know, I've only got three sessions that's going to have to do everything, but I can't do too much. It has to be what they want, and I'm not getting what I thought I was getting from the players, which is good, but I'm also not getting what I hoped I would get from the players, which is bad, and ultimately I don't trust myself to trust my players to – fill in the gaps and keep things moving and all that. And I feel bad about that. And yeah, I just freaked out.
Has that ever happened before?
No. I mean, with things, not with running a game for three sessions. Not with something theoretically so trivial. I think a lot of it's tied into where I am right now and COVID and the election, and things are just a very tightly wound already. And it was funny because after I did it, I felt I was kind of upset with myself and all this, but my stress level suddenly just plummeted. It was like I was so much more relaxed. I was unhappy with myself, but I was so much more relaxed. So I did what I did when I'm freaking out in general because I know it's good for me. I go and I take a nap because that gives me a chance for my body to calm down, and when I wake up, it won't be so bad. So I woke up. And Trish and I hung out, and we binged a bunch of Raised by Wolves, the new HBO Max show, because we had only seen a couple of the episodes. You froze up looking like your Popeye. All right, now you're moving again. All right. Yeah, so we watched a whole bunch of them. We are actually caught up except for whatever episode dropped today. I do not like that show. I'm still watching it. I do not like it. Once again, I want an apocalypse where people can get along, like some people. I get the post-apocalyptic resource scarcity tribal thing, and, you know, you have to fight each other. But within your tribe, could you not have people secretly betraying each other all the time? Because every apocalyptic show has that, and it means every apocalyptic show is just The Walking Dead, and The Walking Dead sucks. I'm tired of this shit. And also, we recently had a revelation in Raised by Wolves, where it's a big thing about origins and stuff, and like, this was amazing information, and we got to see it all played out via sort of flashback, and I was like, no, that was pretty much what I assumed. Like, literally based on the information you already told us, that was just sort of a walkthrough of how logically that would have gone.
Yeah.
Like, other than one creepy baby, none of that was remotely surprising or unexpected at all. So, yeah, don't like the show. And then we watched a movie that I was very excited about that I also didn't like. It's on Netflix. It's called What Happened to Monday. You may have seen it because it looks like the kind of thing you and your wife would like to watch.
No, we have watched the other show you were just talking about. But not
yeah, Raised by Wolves. How are you feeling about that?
My major issue with it is the weird heteronormativity of it. like if you were going to make a robot that was going to be responsible for raising children, you would,
it should know something about children.
Well, but what I'm saying is there, you designed it in a way where it's fulfilled a lot of human maternal tropes. Like, that's just what you would do. Like, it's, I mean, there's, in the beginning of the show, there's a point where she's nourishing the fetuses by plugging things into her in the general vicinity of where, you know, a mammal's nipples would be. It's like, what?
that's Ridley Scott, though.
That's the best machine design you have for this is basically, and are we supposed to think that's a metaphor or something? Because it's pretty on the nose. You know what I mean? It's like, And the way the male android act, why is there even a male and female android called mother and father? Why even have that? I mean, it's like,
that's how it is.
That's just, all that's weird
what,
to me.
That's what that's God intended for its androids. Except wait, you're atheist.
But they're atheists.
No, I just love that mother's such a terrible parent. Like they didn't teach these androids anything about human psychology or child behavior before they sent them to raise children on an alien planet.
Well, yeah, and then in the first episode,
this sucks because it hasn't happened yet, but I can foresee it happening. My least favorite character is absolutely going to be Campion. I am so close to hating that little motherfucker. And some of it's because he's 12, but some of it because he's a little motherfucker. And I'm pretty sure he's supposed to be our protagonist, but I'm starting to dislike him heavily.
in the first episode, you have the two androids talking a lot about their programming. My programming this, our programming that. It's like, is this the 60s? I mean, what is this? Is that really how artificial intelligence would talk about? Would they talk about their programming? Would they refer to it as that? Or would they just do what they do? I mean, it seems like the script is there to communicate something to an unsophisticated audience about the fact that these are androids and that they're programmed. So it has the androids do things that don't make sense for the androids or for the narrative, but it's the way that we're going to explain things to an unsophisticated audience, it seems to me. And so I think it's like, I don't understand how this is a modern sci-fi making what seems to me is a lot of mistakes for modern sci-fi, but I mean, you know, maybe it's just me.
When's the last time you saw a Ridley Scott movie? I mean,
well,
it's right in there. I mean,
I guess you're right about that.
This is, and we're going to find out this is actually a prequel to Prometheus.
Yeah.
Like any minute now. And he's only the executive producer on it, but man, does it feel like his kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 It does.
Yeah, so I don't like it, but we're still watching it. But then we watched the What Happened Monday, and it's a movie with an intriguing sort of old-timey sci-fi premise, which I liked. It's in the near future, humanity overpopulation is so bad that evil short-haired Glenn Close institutes a policy where everybody can only have one child per family. And then somebody has septuplets. And so they hide the septuplets and they raise them secretly in this apartment, and when they're old enough to go to school, they're named after the days of the week, and whatever day of the week there is, they get to go outside, and they all are pretending to be one person. And 30 years later, they're all Noomi Rapace.
Okay, wait a minute. They're identical septuplets?
Yes. More or less. They have to do some cosmetic things. In fact, they have a special mirror that they push a button on it, and it gauges their look and tells them like what's off about it to make it match up. Which is freaky, because it's mostly a mirror that tells women how they don't look pretty enough so they can fix it with makeup.
I don't know how possible. I even sort of, I mean, you'd have to have boys in there somewhere. I don't know if this would work.
I mean, we do some a little sci-fi mumbo jumbo beforehand to explain it a little bit, but
okay.
Problem is not that.
Okay,
there are two problems with this. There's a minor problem and a major problem. The minor problem is, it's if you've seen Orphan Black, this is boring because. No offense to Noomi Rapace, the characters, the seven sisters are not that different. It's not that interesting. It's done really well, like the splits, and like you can see it it's very seamlessly affected. But the acting, I'm like, no, these characters aren't that, I don't feel like these are different people. I feel like this is one actress playing seven characters along the same way. And if you've seen Tatiana Maslany in Orphan Black, you've seen the best, and it's silly.
Very good.
That's the minor problem. The major problem is this feels like speculative fiction. This feels like, here's a premise. What would that mean? What would that say about identity? Blah, 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 blah. No, it's just a C-level, ultra-violent action movie. It very quickly just switches into Noomi Rapace in different wigs being shot at, being murdered, murdering other people, jumping off of buildings, lots of action. It's dumb. It's really dumb. So the point of all this is, by the end of Saturday, I'm like, this day has sucked. Like, everything about this day has sucked, except I had a nice nap. But the week moves on. It's a little freaky, because my whole family is on the West Coast, where all the fires is.
Yeah.
And my mom almost had to evacuate. The line of evacuation stopped about 10 miles north of her.
Oh, wow.
And for a while, my sister couldn't get to her, at least without taking a detour of several hours. But she opted to stay there and all that. Things are calming down. She lost power for about 28 hours, but that was it. But now the air quality apparently is just terrifying. It just looks like night all the time, and there's ash everywhere. And, like, my sister can't let her cat outside because they're like, don't let your cat outside because it will fuck up its lungs. So we're doing that, and, you know, one of them is my sister and her husband, and one of them is my aged mother, and so there's tension going on because they're just looking out for each other there, and I can't do anything from here, and that's all a mess. So that's going on. That's Trish in the back, you can see there. Then my cat was being weird. My oldest cat.
Yeah, you mentioned that in email or
yes.
Chat.
Yeah, I said the good news is I found out my cat's not dying, and you're like, great. And then like 8 hours later, you were like, wait, what?
Yeah, I just gave you a thumbs up, and then later, I don't know what made me look at it, and I went, whoa, what did he say? You say random stuff all the time.
You said unless you were just making some sort of joke, in which case, ugh.
Yeah, and I was like, I can never tell.
Can I be insulted and flattered at the same time? But no. So she's old. She's getting there. Like she's hit 13, I'm pretty sure, by now. And she just hangs around. And they always talk about if your cat is lethargic. I'm like, it's a cat. Sleeps a lot, you know, whatever. And she's been sleeping actually right where this laptop is a lot. But one morning, I wake up and she's really not do it. Like, she'll wake up, but she'll barely do anything. And, like, I can't piss her off. That's the big thing. She's always easily pissed off. She's an absolute princess. Always has been. And I can, like, I'm, like, rubbing her belly and stuff. She's not even trying to bite me. Like, I play with her paws. She's barely pulling them. And I'm like, this is not good. I'm worried about this. But I can't stick around for this because I'm going to the doctor for the first time since January.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
So I'm telling Trish, like, can you watch on Ezio? And she comes out and she looks and she's like, well, she gets like this sometimes if she doesn't eat for long enough. Because as you may remember, my dumbass cat goes on hunger strikes all the damn time. The weather changes, hunger strike. Her brother's bugging her, hunger strike. Hangnail, which I didn't even know they could get, hunger strike. Look at her sideways, hunger strike. And usually what happens is she gets kind of squirrely. She gets a lot more needy. Eventually she eats. Then she eats too much. She throws up. And then she's back to normal over the course of a few days. But Trish is right. If she takes too long, she can start to really feel the effects of malnourishment. And so we have these little meat tube things that are sort of as treats, but we don't use them very often. And we got those, and like we would hold her and we'd put one there and it just oozes out a little pureed meat, and she was looking and she liked them. She ate a whole one, well, most of one in the morning and then a whole one in the evening, and then since then she's doing great again. So that's the good news, is she's all fine now. I'm pissing her off again. It's great. So that's good. Meanwhile, I go to the doctor for the first time since January.
Yeah.
The results were very mixed, which is good because I were expecting them to be very bad.
Yeah, you did say that.
It's been a long time. I've been trapped inside. I've only been going to the gym again for a couple months. Been eating bad, you know, all the things. All the things we're all dealing with right now. But I am fat and broken and sad. So for me, that's life-threatening. But my blood pressure? Normal. My weight, unchanged. My cholesterol, always good, whatever. I was surprised about this. Unfortunately, the big one, the blood sugar, not so good.
Mm-hmm.
So to remind folks at home on an A1C, what you really want is under 6. If you're under 7 as a diabetic, that's pretty good. If you're between 7 and 8, your doctor's like, well, you should work on it a little bit, but it's not too bad, but you should do better. Above 8, you start wondering. If you get to like 10, then they're like, okay, fuck, we got to do something. I got a 9.9.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So we're adding a new medication, which is good. And this is a good, there's a whole series of these kinds of medications and they're very helpful. They again, don't put you into hypoglycemic situations like some things. And like, if I was doing straight insulin, that's what happened. And a lot of these are tied into other factors. And I know I work really hard to not deal with weight or whatever, but these are actually prescribed as weight loss drugs sometimes. And so they potentially help for that. It's not an interesting thing to talk about, except this particular one is daily, which a lot of them are weekly, but they're kind of expensive. So he went to find the one that my insurance would like, and the one my insurance like is daily, and it's an injection.
Oh.
And I've never had to inject myself with stuff, let alone every day. So now I'm doing that. And it's weird. It's a little pen thing. It's kind of cool. The needles, the pharmacist said the needles are really sharp. You might not feel it. I didn't feel nothing. We're still not 100% sure I did it. Like, we couldn't find a thing, and there was a little bit of wetness. I'm like, is that all the stuff? Did it just squirt out, essentially? Like, we can't tell. But hopefully that'll be really helpful. We'll have to see. We are caught up on Lovecraft Country. We watched that on Monday. This was one of my... I liked this episode better than I have some of the ones recently. I'm still solidly in the camp of preferring the book, and I've come up with sort of new reasons why I prefer the book, because the bad guys' plans have more subtlety to them in the book in ways that you can't really do because it's TV, but it was more interesting to me than this version.
Yeah.
It's still good. I still recommend it. But yeah, it's weird. They're definitely doing whole plot point. The TV show is really concerned with intersectionality in a way the book is less so. The book deals with gender a little bit. It's mostly about race, specifically blackness. And the TV show is dealing a lot more with gender and with sexual orientation, which the book didn't touch at all.
Mm.
So that's, I assume you're caught up on it.
Yes.
And it's also starting to wear on me how much grosser it is than the book. Because again, it's TV. So they're really, the transformative stuff that happened in this episode, no sort of sloughing off, like they just changed. There was no, oh, I slough off a whole lot of blood and flesh every time. Ugh.
Yeah, it was gross.
So that's a little here or there. 12 Monkeys, I got through the first season. Still watching it. Still don't know that I like it. But I feel like we're settling to places. I watched today the season 2 premiere, and they were making more jokes. And I'm like, yeah, you're starting to learn. I also have a theory now that although we're still about, you know, oh, the virus is going to kill everybody, we have to stop it, the show is pretty much going to turn into just chasing terrorists around different time periods and having fun doing it. So, which is the show I want. Like, that's way better. So I would love that. Although I say that, and that's basically what Timeless was, and I stopped watching Timeless pretty earlier. But again, Timeless, very humorless. So I'm hoping that's where we're going. We'll see. And then last night we watched, not a movie, a special on HBO. It's a new special. You might have heard of it. It's called Coastal Elites.
Yeah, I've seen something about it, but I don't really know what it's about.
I will tell you. It is... it is very literally a set of 5 monologues, each between 15 and 20 minutes. It is Bette Midler, Dan Levy, or Levy, I don't know. Eugene Levy's son, the guy from Schitt's Creek. He's kind of the hot thing right now. Issa Rae and Sarah Paulson and some woman I don't know who did great, but I just don't know her. And they all take place between January of 2020 and June of 2020. And they all have slightly different premise. They all by and large are, some sort of telemedia thing, but they vary. One is a telemedicine therapy session. One is somebody talking with their friend. One appears to be a vlog. One is somebody live streaming something, and then they kind of just start talking in it. And one's actually just a camera in a interrogation room with somebody filling out forms. The really short version is they're all monologues about how people hate Trump and most specifically the administration. They of course overlap with all the issues about COVID and all the other issues going on and, you know, Pence and Ivanka and things like that. But it's all very much anti-Trump monologues. On a craft level, they're exquisitely performed, but unsurprising given who's involved. And they're pretty well written monologues. I mean, there's the thing, because afterwards Trish was like, I don't really like monologues very much. They bother me because XYZ. And I was like, I agree with you 100%, except those are the reasons why I absolutely love monologues. So, I mean, take that into consideration. Unsurprisingly, it is incredibly cathartic and incredibly masturbatory. Like, I think the attempt here is to encapsulate what liberal individuals, the frustration of liberal individuals during this year on a variety of levels. And it is very cathartic in that vein, but it also is so incredibly one-sided and, you know, no nuance. And I mean, it's shooting fish in a barrel. One of the monologues, which is a really good one, they all also seem very plausible. Like, they could be about real things that happen, but one of them very specifically creates a story involving someone very famous and close to this stuff that I'm like, I don't like that because I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. And so then the whole thing feels weird. But the others are all very much that story makes sense and I'm sure it is made up, but it totally could happen. So it's odd. I mean, I don't recommend it and I don't not recommend it. It's a real good catharsis, like just watching people yelling in frustration the things you want to be yelling in frustration. But it's just masturbatory is really the word for it. It's just, I mean, because nobody who disagrees with it is watching it. And if they are, they're watching about 10 minutes and talking about how stupid it was and stopping. Like, it's not that kind of thing. So it's very much an echo chamber, but I don't know. I enjoyed watching it. I probably won't think about it much after today, is what it mostly probably comes down to. Although it's been a while since I've seen Bette Midler really act, and that was cool. Oh, I'm 4 chapters away from finishing the book. It's going to be done this week.
Good. Excellent.
It'll be done this week, and then next week I start trying to sell it. So that's good. So there's this game, this video game from a while back called Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. It was on the PS3. And it was made by a company started by Red Sox pitcher Curt Schilling. And it went really poorly and bankrupted the company and everything. But and it wasn't supposed to be one game. It was supposed to be a whole big, long thing. But that game still came out. And I remember playing it. And it was good and bad. The combat was very satisfying. It had some very intuitive sort of action-y combat that was pretty easy to do, but you got to be really cool and stuff, and a variety of different weapons and moves and stuff, and that was fun. And the story was really big and robust, and the world was huge, but it all felt a little samey. And I remember enjoying it, but by the end, I wasn't enjoying it, and I barely finished it, and I never touched the DLC. So it was kind of mixed feelings. Well, recently they came out with a remaster of it for the PS4, cleverly titled Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning. And it mostly just looks prettier, runs on the PS4, and has, I think, a little extra area that it didn't for like 5 hours more gameplay or whatever. And I wasn't interested in it, but I recommended it to a friend who hadn't played the other one that I thought he particularly might be interested in it. And then this week, I spent $55 buying it.
Really?
And then a couple days ago, even though I'm playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I love Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I have so much left in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I downloaded it, installed it, and started playing it. No, my brain is making the face you're making. I don't know why either.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time understanding.
You're waiting for the explanation. I have none. I have known.
There's no punchline here?
No. I mean, it's
okay.
I mean, other than my own mental health issues, I mean, that's funny, I guess.
But, wait a minute. Okay. So explain to me the face on everything you said before you said you spent $50 buying it. I mean, that doesn't sound like something you would do. It doesn't sound like something you would do based on everything that you said before.
And I didn't do it on accident. I like went and looked at it, saw the price, thought about it, bought it.
But.
Right? Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Here's the closest.
Yeah, I don't, that doesn't compute to me.
Or me. Nature. No, here's the closest hodgepodge of a theory I can come up with for why this is happening.
Okay, I'd like to hear it.
Other than, you know, brain worms or whatever.
Brain worms.
It was fun at the beginning, and I remembered good things about it, and I'm sure there's a nostalgia factor. And I think what I thought was I'm enjoying Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but it's not, I'm not wow right now. It's a tame sort of portion of thing. And starting a new game sounds fun. And because starting a new game is, I mean, the very beginnings usually suck because you're really weak or whatever. But like once you start getting all the cool bits and stuff, that part's fun. And I was like, I think I'm just going to get this and I'm going to play it. And then if I start to get bored with it, I'll switch back over to Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And then when I get bored with that, I'll switch back. And mostly, I'll play whichever sounds fun at the time, because that's what should be happening with there's nothing about video games that's a job. For me.
Right.
It's 100% for fun. So I should play it when it feels fun. And the last couple days just felt fun with this one. I don't know how long it'll last.
Okay. But all that makes
the
sense.
The money I think may just be because I have a lot, like, you know, we have our little allowance we each get in the budget. And mine has built up. I haven't really bought anything for a while, so that wasn't a lot of money.
Oh, okay.
In there, so and also I hadn't bought anything for a while. And there's a very visceral thing about like purchasing things that will fill the void, you know. So I think that might have been a component.
Yeah, I think that's the piece. That's like everything you just said about another video game, something else. That yeah, I get all that, but you have other video games and free ones, and you can get more free
plenty
ones.
Plenty of ones so I haven't played.
Yeah, so it's like, why would you spend
it was,
any money
I think
at all
it was in the nostalgia. I was remembering the fun bits of it.
Gotcha, yeah.
And there are still fun bits. One of the weapon kinds they have are chakrams, which are like the things like Xena had.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have two of them, and they fly all over the place and shit. And I'm just hitting triangle periodically, and it's awesome. But there's like a bunch of different weapons, and there's sort of three trees. There's you know, there's the rogue tree and the wizard tree and the fighter tree. But you can mix and match all you want, and it unlocks different things when you do. And the whole premise of it is that you're the hero. So of course you died and then came back to life, and nobody really understands why, because that's how video games work. But consequently, because of that, you are untied from fate. Basically, you have no specific destiny, and in fact you have a power where you can alter other people's destinies, even though everything else in the universe is tied into specific destiny. So that's fun. And yeah, it's got a big old alchemy crafting system and a blacksmithing one and a thing to craft gems that you put in your equipment, and all that's kind of cool, and lots of different weapons and skills and stuff. So, and it's all very fairy based. It's a whole world that has, you know, elves and dwarf like things and stuff like that. But then you've got the fae that are these immortal creatures and stuff, and it's very pretty. So yeah, I'm doing that. I don't know what that's about, but yeah. So I'm in a weird place.
Why didn't it do very well on the PS3?
I think it did okay.
Oh.
The company didn't go bankrupt because it didn't sell. The company went bankrupt because of insanity. I mean, that's a story for another time. They hired the best in the business in a whole bunch of things. Todd McFarlane, R.A. Salvatore, a bunch of stuff like this. Threw a bunch of money at it, borrowed a bunch of money from the government of Rhode Island, and then didn't get their shit together. As this was in production, I was in the World of Warcraft Guild with Kurt Schilling while this was all going on, and it was going to be a huge MMORPG he was inventing and all this. And then it didn't work, and then the company went bankrupt and had to sell the game to somebody else. And then he turned into a giant right-wing shithead. So I don't talk about him much, but game's interesting. All right, let's draw a thing before we're out of time.
Okay.
I cannot read this. You know why?
No.
Because it's upside down. Now I can read this.
Okay.
It's interesting. I feel like we've covered this one a few times accidentally. Nobody's asked this before, but I feel like we have talked about this. It's from Blood Sparrow. It says, masks or neck gaiters? I always feel like neck gaiters are like little alligators that are just going to eat your neck. Look out, it's neck gaiters! In fact, if I was still wearing them, I would call them neck alligators. I like that. Why are they called neck gaiters? If you know why they're called neck gaiters, go to the blog, themagicthetalkinghat.com, and tell us what Nathaniel Hawthorne might think about them. So you wear masks. You've always worn masks because of your hideous disfigurement in the opera house. No, you, yeah, since this has started, you've just been masked.
I think there's stylish. I think everybody will be wearing them in the future. Yeah, I didn't even know what neck gaiters were until you talked about it on the podcast. Yeah.
And Trish had just seen a thing on YouTube that was like, here, in 2 minutes, you can make one of these. It's great. And that's what we wore for quite a while. And then a couple things happened. There was a study, not about them, that had some observations related to them that they could have less effectiveness than other masks. There were later follow-up studies, apparently, that showed they are less effective for certain reasons. I think mostly having to do with the closeness to the face and that kind of thing. But more what happened is everybody in the world was like, oh my God, that critter is terrible. You might as well go without. Those people are terrorists. It's awful. And I didn't want to deal with that shit. So I was like, fine, I'll buy some masks. So I bought some masks. And I love my masks. Oh. True, I don't have the versatility of wearing it on my neck and pulling it up, but it's so much cooler. Like, the neck gaiter was so hot, even the really thin ones we had, because it's a band around your whole head. And the masks are so much smaller, and they fit better, because they're the ones that have the little piece of metal right here, and you mold it to the bridge of your nose. And I love them. Not going back. Only time I wear the neck gaiter is when we go next door for our socially distant bonfire. I wear one around my neck because when the wind changes and the smoke blows at me, I put it up over here because it's a good smoke filter. And I feel it is a better smoke filter than wearing the mask. And also it's harder to be taking the mask on and off. Whereas this, I just hold it up. And then when the smoke goes a different way, I just put it back down. So. Yeah.
So yep. That answers that question, I guess.
We are not going to have to double podcast in September.
No.
We almost were going to, but then somebody murdered Wonder Woman. No, wait. Somebody sent Wonder Woman through a time machine to Christmas.
Christmas? Can you believe it? I don't know. I feel about
I find it weird that anybody thinks it's going to be better than. We need to start preparing for this, folk. 2020 sucks. There is very little indication, except possibly a really nice result in a national election, that 2021 is going to be much better.
I mean, I was glad they moved it. I thought that was the right move. But
yeah,
then
yeah,
when
yeah, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, when they didn't move it somewhere to 2021, I was baffled by that because I thought if you can't do it in October, how is December, even late December, better?
More and more people are deciding or believing that things are getting better, which at this point they are not. We're getting smarter about how we handle it, but they're not. When I went shopping this week, I was so pissed off because – So, first of all, Hy-Vee has the one direction lanes, the aisles. So many people just not doing that anymore. And it used to be like every once in a while somebody's like, I'm sorry, I went down the wrong one. I didn't think about it, and that's fine. But now people just going. And then I saw multiple people. They wore the masks inside like they're supposed to. Then they just pulled them down to their neck and were just totally uncovered the whole time. And there are also way more people than there used to be. I'm like, God, why does everybody seem to think this is about over? Because it's not.
Yeah, I don't
if
know.
If we get conservative estimates, if we get a vaccine by the end of this year, we maybe are back to normal by the end of next year. And honestly, estimates right now are it's probably going to be the middle of next year before we get a vaccine. So
yeah, I don't know what people are thinking exactly.
There's a mental stress thing, and I get it. It's weighing on people. I've talked to people who live together, and their relationships are starting to feel the stress. I've even had a little bit with Trish and I, and we're real good at that stuff, but I've had a couple times lately where I'm like, it would be awesome if one of us could just be gone for a while.
Well...
But Trish is theoretically going back to work part-time next month. They're phasing in having people go back to the office on a rotating schedule. So
we haven't really heard anything about, I mean, I'm pretty sure that it, my wife's work is just, you know, to the end of the year, that's when they'll make another decision about it.
And some have done that. I know my brother-in-law way back in like June, they were like, go home, work from home. We'll see you in January.
Well, see here, the thing that I'm seeing as far as numbers and stuff like that is the whole school question really that you've got two things happening with the school question. Two categories is things are worse. And the other is we don't really know what's going on there and we don't know what's going to happen. But either way, it seems to me, and the way I'm approaching the whole thing, I guess, and maybe I'm an overly cautious person. A lot of people say that, so I don't know. But as soon as the school thing was going to start, and also as soon as our governor seemed to violate her own approach to things being tailored to individual whatever, but suddenly when it came to opening schools, it was going to be a one-size-fits-all thing. I didn't understand that reversal in thinking, but it seemed to me that, okay, we need to, all of us who are sort of watching all this unfold, we need to realize that this, whatever anyone's doing for school, whether it's Iowa, whether it's a specific school district, whether it's another state and their school districts, we need to maybe prepare for that being a disaster, right? Like my step niece started school here, as I probably mentioned. And, you know, well, we talked about that a little bit on the podcast. You were talking about how, you know, there were people out betting basically, how long is the University of Iowa going to be in session before everything changes because of there's some huge outbreak, which I'm not sure if there has been one. I haven't heard of one.
No, but they're still talking about how, like, people will stand up in regents meetings and be like, here's all the data showing that this is a terrible idea for so many levels. And then immediately they'll stand up and say, so anyway, we're going to keep doing things just like this.
Yeah, so either they shouldn't be doing what they're doing. And I know what their reasons are. They're not pulling it out of the air reasons. I mean, there are things about kids going back to school and certain high-risk kids not being in school is really bad for them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also the reality of a pandemic. You know, I mean, it just seems like for me, being sort of outside the whole debate and not always knowing what to think of it, honestly. I mean, a lot of people have very solid opinions about it. I'm trying to look at all the facts as best I can and trying to figure out, but there's so much uncertainty, you know? So the only thing I can come up with in all of this is to think, whatever's happening, whatever decisions they make, whatever stats or facts they use, I'm going to prepare myself and I'm going to conduct myself in such a manner that I'm going to be looking out for there to be a spike or something going wrong here, because you're doing something that has the potential to not work out very well. Now, I don't know what's going on at the University of Iowa. I haven't heard that it's been a disaster, but it's only been, I mean,
well,
it's
our county's growth numbers are pretty impressive, and that is largely being put at the feet of the university.
In cases, you mean?
Yes.
Has there been a spike in deaths too? I check every day.
The deaths are pretty small. The new cases, we were as high as 100 a day in Johnson County. Then we dropped down to around 20 a day, which I was happy about. Last couple of days, we're up to around 30, 35 a day again.
Hmm.
And I have seen a lot of shit recently. I have seen Panera just packed with people and them not wearing masks. And Trish and I are on the verge, like, we're, because the thing we miss is going out to a restaurant, and we were like, oh, maybe we'll do in the outside seating and all that. And then, of course, the CDC is doing some nationwide random sampling of people both with and without it. And the one thing that they can consistently find a correlation with is the people who got it recently went to eat at a restaurant. And not necessarily inside, outside too, because it depends on a whole lot of factors, including distance and temperature and wind direction. And the basic thing is when you're at a restaurant, people have to take off the masks to eat and drink.
Yes.
And you don't have to do that other places. And so we're immediately like, nope. I mean, we're still ordering plenty of takeout and delivery, but we're not going places. We're over time. So, damn, I was going to do this whole thing where I pretended to be Nathaniel Hawthorne talking about what to do with the kids in the school, but it was all going to be a metaphor.
Yeah, it'd be better if
I'll save it for next time.
It'd be better if it was an allegory. He uses allegories.
An allegory is just a whole bunch of metaphors wrapped up with twine.
Allegory. Allegories would be better.
If you want to vent your shit about COVID, do it on our blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. If you want to watch other very good actors vent your shit about COVID, watch Coastal Elite. If you want this podcast to succeed, write into the podcast, the email, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. I can't tell you how few questions we have now, because that would give things away. But it's less than three. So we need more. Also, if you want to be on the 500th episode of the podcast, you absolutely can. You just have to let me know and an email where I can send you an invite. So, you know, email the hat about that too if you want. Like, make a distinction so the hat knows what things are questions for the hat and what things are just saying you want to be on the podcast. Or if you put it on the blog, I'll get it too. So, whatever. Or if you happen to have an email for me already because you're special, use that. Anyway, in the meantime, watch out for neck alligators.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.